Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, you know, it's interesting that they say that they defended abortion access. I think we talked about this before. There's a Minnesota Supreme Court case from like 1995 that said there's a right of abortion in the Minnesota Constitution. So I don't know what they defended.
Yeah.
It was already there.
It was already there. Right. And they expanded it. I mean, again, and I wonder if people would have voted the same way if they had given the totality. One, if they had had somebody standing there going, by the way, it was already, you could already do it.
Yeah.
And here's what they really went and did. To the accuracy of it, I actually think this is more, somebody, people were questioning, this is as accurate as regular polling. I actually think this type of display is more accurate because people aren't being questioned. They're reading the question. They're not being prompted in any way, shape, or form. There's nobody there judging them. They can make just an instinctive, non-judgmental vote on that and probably be more honest than they would typically be in your standard phone polling or survey done by a group of professionals.
Mm-hmm. I notice they don't have on there the $260 rebate checks instead of the $2,000 that they promised. That probably wouldn't have any popcorn kernels in it if they did that.
I still haven't gotten mine.
I'm not getting one.
I should get one, but I realized that I always owe the state.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they have my direct deposit information.
Mm.
So I'm probably getting a check, which scares me because it could have been lost by now because we don't pay much attention to what comes in the mail anymore because we do everything online. So good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Before we get to legal stuff, this is legal stuff too, though. McLaughlin did a new poll. I don't know if you've seen this yet. It's early. It is interesting, though. So after Georgia's indictment of Trump, the new national poll shows that he not only beats Biden, but he would defeat the current president in an electoral landslide. The McLaughlin National Survey finds that Trump leads Biden 47-43. That's up 2 points this month alone. The voter model for the poll, they assigned 4 more points of Biden in 2020. Let me back up. Even more remarkable with the voter model for this poll is we assigned 4 more points of Biden 2020 voters than Trump 2020 voters. This means that looking to 2024, there is an 8-point turnaround in favor of Trump from the 2020 election. Biden voters are switching to Trump, and here's the really big news. In key battleground states, Trump leads Biden 49-41. If the election was today, Trump would defeat Biden in an electoral landslide. Other national surveys also confirm the huge turnaround. And here's a question that I have for you. Now, Donald Trump never won the popular vote in 16 or 2020. Right. National popular vote. And almost all the polls had him losing the popular vote in both elections. Their poll shows him leading. So this is where, now this is early, it's one poll, McLaughlin, they're looking at other polls. It is rather interesting, though, and the fact that it's gone up, this was after the Georgia indictment. You already see some talk of desperation setting in with discussions around the 14th Amendment,
mm-hmm.
and getting him off the ballot. But is there an argument here as it relates to, like, jury tainting? From the angle of, if it looks like Trump is a legitimate threat, and that's the narrative in the public media, you've got juries, you know, whether it's D.C., whether it's Florida, they're going to have to find individuals, they're going to see all of this. If they are individuals not supportive of Trump, does this not bring about a level of concern that they would be, you know, making decisions based off of the concern that they have that he could win the election again?
Yeah, possibly. You know, but there's a process. There's a jury selection process. So his lawyers will have a chance to. They have so many strikes where they can knock some of them out. So I guess we'll just have to see. The January 6th indictment, the one in D.C. is a tough one for him because you've got an Obama appointed judge, and that jury pool is going to be very anti-Trump no matter what.
Right.
The Florida one, yeah, might be more favorable. I actually think of all the indictments, that probably is the one that's he's going to have his toughest fight on that one. The other ones are kind of more novel legal theories.
Yeah, the Manhattan DA in Georgia seem thin.
Yeah, Georgia's going to get removed to federal court, and that's going to take a lot of the firepower away from that one. And so, yeah, we guess we just have to see where these all play out. I know there's a lawsuit going on that's been filed on the 14th Amendment issue that you mentioned. I have a hard time believing that that's going to go far absent a conviction on one of these, on, you know, the on either the Atlanta or the January 6th, the DOJ indictment.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's innocent until proven guilty in this country, theoretically. So I don't see how they're going to make the 14th Amendment lawsuit stick without an order from a court, without a decision on one of those cases.
You may or may not know the answer to this. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien joins me in studio, and I'm talking with things of items that I did not prep him on. So you may or may not know the answer to this, but I know that in Florida, there are, you know, there's possibilities of convictions that just involve just monetary compensation, not
right.
jail time.
Right.
Do you know if is that the case for all of them? Is that just the case for Florida? Do you have any idea if there's a monetary way out of these, even if he is convicted on some of these?
The my understanding is the New York and the Florida ones would be monetary or minimal time, right? The two that involve the Atlanta one with this RICO statute and the January 6th indictment would, when they're talking about, fomenting an insurrection or whatever it is,
right.
those would carry, I believe, prison time if he was convicted on those.
It's interesting to see his continued, not surprising to see his continued support go up. And I'll make one comment on this and we'll dive into some other items. But in my opinion, Trump now, like if I were advising Trump, for what it's worth, I would tell him to continue to hammer that he's being, he's been being served an injustice with what's happening to him with the indictments. But I also would hope that he would start talking about the issues and touting not only his accomplishments of what he did when he was president, but also what he would do moving forward based off this McLaughlin poll. And there's a lot more details in here. It's clear Biden's job approval's in the tank. They're worried about his age. They don't like Kamala Harris. They're worried about the economy. And I hope that Trump, when he has the opportunity to speak to voters, will start addressing some of those things and even potentially go to the next debate. He'll suck the air out of the room. But, if he's going to be the nominee, he's going to have to reach more people and certainly convince a lot of conservatives who may have jumped off of his bandwagon because of all of this that, he still wants to go and tackle these issues. It doesn't seem like he's been talking much about the issues and mostly talking about what's been happening to him relating to the indictment. So
yeah.
I hope that he does that moving forward.
Yeah, first with the indictments, I think it's a case, and maybe this explains that poll or other polls. My thought would have been, if you really want to get him and get him off the ballot, go with the January 6th indictment. When you have four of them, people are starting to lose. It's too much. People are starting to lose interest,
yeah.
Right? Now you're playing into his argument that they're out to get him. It's a witch hunt, right? And so maybe voters are just tuning out from all of this stuff. In terms of his going to the debate, I don't see him going to a debate because he steps onto a stage with Ron DeSantis and some of the others, and he's going to have to account for how the administration handled the COVID response.
Oh, that's a good point.
And that is a potential landmine for him, even among some of his core supporters.
Yeah, that's a good point. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien in studio. Let's go here. I thought this was interesting. Minnesota Court of Appeals says checking your ringing phone while driving to see who is calling does not violate the state's hands-free law. The opinion was released on Monday. It was in connection to a semi-truck driver, Roger Gutsky, who rolled his rig and spilled a load of soybeans while checking his phone to see an incoming spam call. Well, the crash happened back on October 8th of 2021. He was charged with driving with a suspended license, operating a motor vehicle while using a cellular device. He argued that he glanced at his phone, that it's not prohibited by Minnesota's hands-free law, to which the Minnesota Court of Appeals agreed. I'm finding this surprising. Did they miss something?
No, you sent me the story, and I appreciate that, and I read through it. So there was a subsequent amendment to the hands-free law that said now even that prohibits a motorist from even holding a wireless communications device with one or both hands while operating a
right.
motor vehicle. Okay. So one thing is he was charged initially for violating the previous law that didn't have that provision in there. Okay. And so what the Court of Appeals said is based on the language of that statute, checking his phone to verify that it was a spam call, because those vehicles aren't like your typical passenger vehicle where the screen pops up and it tells you who's, you know, if you have your phone tethered in on a USB cable, it doesn't tell you who's necessarily who's calling you, right? So he was charged under the prior law, and you know, as this case proceeded, the legislature changed the law. So I don't know that we would have the same result today because the statute is different.
Okay.
The way it works is when the legislature makes a change while there's a criminal proceeding going, you can't go back and recharge somebody because the law changed and now the behavior that they engaged in is now criminal, right? It goes the other way, and there's a reference. It's something about the suspended license offense. Is there was another change, and it's called the amelioration doctrine. So if the legislature changes a law to make something that was originally a crime not a crime, then the defendant can use that as a way of having the court throw out the conviction or overturn the conviction because they changed the law. It's no longer a crime. So it works in the favor of a criminal defendant, but it doesn't ever go, it doesn't, because of our system and due process and everything else, you're not going to go back and say, well, hey, we changed the law and now you're going to be charged under that law.
For some reason, and I do not know the through line here, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, but for some reason in my mind, the legalization of recreational marijuana keeps popping into my head.
It did. If you guys scroll back through my Twitter feed from I think it was right before they passed the legalization bill was in conference committee when this happened, but I think it was the Mankato police tweeted out they were bragging about this big marijuana bust that they had down, you know, in their city. And I put out on Twitter, I said, who wants to explain to them the amelioration doctrine?
Okay, so there is a through line there. Yeah. All right, interesting.
Yeah, there have been cases relating to a cannabis offense that were sitting in queue. Those were likely tossed out under the amelioration doctrine, or will be tossed out under the amelioration doctrine.
I was covering the story yesterday, keeping with the recreational marijuana. It was in the Daily Mail, and it always takes these overseas sources to do the work that our media here in the United States should be doing. But they were tracking the states, the 24 states that had already gone and passed recreational marijuana, and they were laying out all of the problems that they were having, including, you know, the fact that a lot of these businesses could potentially go back bankrupt because of the policies that have been passed in these particular states that, you know, make their profit margins too thin, the black market taking place. I know that, and we have a long way to go before we actually end up seeing whatever the results are going to be. I mean, we have it being sold on tribal lands, but it'll be a couple of years before we have the dispensaries opening up. But I know that you've been, you know, dealing quite a bit with this, with breweries and mm-hmm. others as well. The continued sort of concern, the waiting game of recreational marijuana and the impact it's going to have on these people that want to go and open these businesses and these dispensaries?
Yeah, it's definitely an issue. The waiting time combined with the dispensaries that are already opening on reservation lands. And let me be clear, I love that they're doing that. You know, because we don't have to spend 18 months of bureaucracy to get, I love what the message is. There's like three different tribes that are doing it. You know, it's not that hard. So why can't the state figure it out? Why can't they they got their law passed. Why can't they come to market faster? It's problematic. You know, the thing that does help and is we still, you know, the low potency, hemp edibles, the THC derived from hemp, the Delta 8, the Delta 9, those are still allowed to be sold without a license. And that's going to be my prediction, that's still going to be a large share of this market because of the ease of access and because they were introduced here first. But in terms of
they've been available for a while.
Yeah. But in terms of the full strength cannabis dispensaries, Certainly the way that the time lag is going to have an impact as to the ultimate success of these businesses. And I know that in talking to people involved with the new law that, you know, they were cognizant of the flaws in the California system. You know, we look to Washington and Colorado as better models. They studied a variety of different states before they put this forward. But this is, again, another, it's an issue of, you know, it's the licensure piece. And obviously it's just like alcohol. You're not going to let people do this without a license, to run a dispensary. It's an issue. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I answered one of my. I knew that they had looked to other states, and I forgive me for not having a lot of faith in what the DFL passed this legislative session, especially based off some of the stories that we've already covered this morning, SRO specifically. I know you're running a little bit behind. You want to hang up for another segment?
Sure.
Cool. I want to go back to. I know we were going back and forth on text. I want to revisit the Indiana man who was arrested for DUI while driving the children's Power Wheels toy. Mm-hmm. I know you had some thoughts on that. Mm-hmm. Also, I know you're a football guy.
Yeah,
I want to get your thoughts on this Native American group that is now blasting the NFL's Washington Commanders after a representative mocked them as they were pushing forward with a movement to get them to change their name back to the Redskins. So we'll get to your talkbacks, your comments from the iHeartRadio app, and talk more with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien next on Twin Cities News Talk.
Ew. Gotta get rid of this old Backstreet Boys t-shirt.
Tell me why.
I've washed it so many times, but the odor won't come out.
Have you tried Downy Rinse and Refresh? It doesn't just cover up odors. It helps remove them.
Downy Rinse and Refresh removes more odor in one wash than the leading value detergent in three washes. Find it wherever you buy laundry products.
This back-to-school season, Downy and Tide are giving back with $1.5 million in scholarships. Enter to win. No purchase necessary. U.S. and D.C., 16 or older. End September 30th. Rules at downy.com/scholarship/official rules.
You do know that, at least here in St. Paul, the dispensaries are selling regular old pot. And I thought they couldn't until 2025, but they are.
Hey, John. States like California that have legalized marijuana have made fatal mistakes to keep increasing the taxes on marijuana sales, the point where many of these dispensaries started closing and the black market became profitable again. And so states like Minnesota that have legalized marijuana better be careful to keep the sales tax rates on marijuana low unless they want to make the black market popular again.
Hey, John and Robbie, just a quick question here. So in regards to the hands-free law, once they start doing the emergency alerts on your phone for road closures and changes to whichever route or what have you, how is that going to play into this hands-free law? Because I don't want an alert going off on my phone that's really loud just to tell me some road is closed. Thanks, guys.
Twin Cities News Talk, John Justice, producer Robbie grabbing the talkback comments from the iHeartRadio app, and lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien hanging out ahead of my conversation with Liz Cullen from Alpha News. We're going to have that to the last comment there with regard to hands-free, Robbie had in his rundown, we're going to have, when's that alert? October 4th, right? They're going to send out that nationwide alert on the phones. Any thoughts on what the comment was as it relates to emergency alerts on your phones and road closures? Does that apply at all?
I'd have to look at the current version of the statute to see if there's some sort of an exception for, you know, the amber alerts or...
Yeah.
I had one time I was driving to a meeting with a client and it was bad weather and my phone just started going bonkers because there was a tornado warning. I haven't looked at it, but my guess is there's some kind of exception in there for the emergency stuff.
One more question on the legalization of recreational marijuana, Jeff O'Brien. But this was something that I covered in the story yesterday with the dispensary starting to close in California and the black market becoming more profitable, worried about the tax rates. I don't know the tax rates currently. I don't know if you do. If you have any thoughts on whether or not we're kind of in a good spot as it relates to how we're going to tax the marijuana moving forward.
I thought Well, I know that we just saw a story about like $600,000 in tax revenues that came in. And I thought that was, maybe I'm wrong, I thought that was based on a 10% rate.
I think so.
And it was hitting, because it's already hitting, of course, the lower potency stuff. But yes, that is, that the caller brings up a good point, that, and that is a big issue, is by overtaxing it, the threat is that the black market stays, you know, vibrant.
Right. Well, that's a concern now, because it's going to, as we've been talking about, it's going to take a while before the legal dispensaries, you know, apart from the, you know, apart from where it's being sold now with the tribes, mm-hmm. it's going to take so long for them to open, but you can still grow it at home.
Yeah, eight plants, four flowering, which produces a lot of stuff, is my understanding.
I assume this St. Paul dispensary shouldn't, if they are selling regular old pot, they shouldn't be. So far, yeah. NC outed them.
Yeah,
whoever they are.
Yeah, it's definitely you can't be. It's a no-no right now. Plus, even when there are licenses, the way this is set up is a dispensary is not going to be able to sell both the full strength cannabis products and the low potency hemp products. There is going to be a separation there. That's the one area where you can't have.
Why?
Probably consumer protection, that if somebody doesn't know what they're buying and buys something stronger than they actually wanted.
Well,
I don't know.
Do that with alcohol.
But the low potency in large part was left there because of the success that the breweries have had making the beverages. So the breweries will have it. You'll still have your.
Are you talking the Delta 8 and
Delta 9.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
You can't. So you won't be able to sell Delta 8 and Delta 9 if you're selling the full, your regular just straight.
Right, you have to pick one lane and go with it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't think we should be doing that.
That's what they'd.
I know. I know. This is why I'm a talk show host and I don't serve in politics. All right, real quick. I wanted to revisit this because I thought it was funny. Indiana man last week arrested for DUI while driving a children's Power Wheel toy. James McKee was driving a Power Wheels Jeep 9 p.m. Wednesday when he was reportedly stopped by an officer with the Indiana State Police. The man was reportedly driving in the roadway with no lights or reflectors. The state trooper allegedly pulled over the Power Wheels toy after observing the driver of the toy vehicle driving erratically and showing signs of impairment. I don't know if he was driving in the middle of the road. Does that matter? The man was driving the Power Wheels Jeep was charged with operating a vehicle while intoxicated with a prior conviction, a level 6 felony. I assume he still would have gotten charged if he didn't have the prior conviction, or perhaps mm-hmm. the officer would have let him off. Can you get busted for a DUI for riding a bicycle?
No. Well, so. So
many questions.
It depends. I mean, obviously, it depends on whatever the state statutes are. But when I was listening to this, when you were first talking about it, and on the podcast over the weekend, and it brought to mind, there was a story. I think it's from the mid to late 1990s. I forget what the year it was that happened, but it was very well publicized because of how bizarre it was. And it was up north in Proctor, Minnesota, and there was a guy that had motorized his Lazy Boy, and he could and had it and had like wheels and a motor on the thing.
You see a lot of those at NASCAR races, by the way. They still do that.
And he took it to a bar, he got drunk, and he left in the thing, and he got nailed for a DUI. And if you look at that case, it was based on the fact that Minnesota's definition of motor vehicle is basically anything self-propelled. And so it qualified, right? Once he had motorized it. So this case in Indiana, I think you'd get the same result in Minnesota using that definition of what is a motor vehicle.
This raises questions too. Now that we need answers now, we won't find them. But I just, with the proliferation of electric bicycles, because I see them mm-hmm. a ton now, because mm-hmm. I go out on rides almost every single day, and 99% of the time I go through a bunker near where I live, just mm-hmm. a few minutes from my house, and I've seen way more people on electric bikes than I did before. So I you could get busted for a DUI on an electric bike, But also assume, again, going back to the marijuana aspect of it, you could get busted for being high. Now you're going to have a law enforcement officer there. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to mm-hmm. do that. However, I mean, we do have a story here of a guy driving a Power Wheels Jeep. So it's not out of the realm of possibility to see somebody get busted on an e-bike
mm-hmm.
because they were high. If we've reached a place where we can actually, law enforcement can actually determine whether or not an individual is high. I still go with the offer him snacks test, but probably not the most effective. All right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to hold off. If we have time, we'll get to it. This story with regard to the sales manager for the NFL's Washington Commanders called the group a fake group when they demanded a petition that the team return their original Washington Redskins name. This is according to the Native American Guardians Association. They got upset and they fired back. So I'm going to put a pin in this. I want to revisit a story that we covered extensively yesterday at this time here on Twin Cities News Talk. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien joins me in studio. I was going through the story of the Osseo area schools. They appear to have proposed to fly the LGBT pride flag indefinitely at the school. So there in of itself is one part of the story and the original reason why I covered it in the first place. However, in the story was this nugget. The recently hired superintendent, Dr. Kim Heal, began the meeting where they were discussing the LGBT pride flag. Explaining that they would be holding space. And she explained what holding space means. She said, so board members, as we enter this conversation, talking about the LGBT pride flag, I want you to understand that we hold space, and I'm going to share what holding space means for us, and we will hold space for our presenters today. The concept of holding space, it means that we're willing to walk alongside another person in whatever journey they're on without judging them, without making them feel inadequate, without trying to fix them, without trying to impact the outcome. She explained, when we hold space for another person. We had a lot of people that were reaching out to the show, giving examples of times when this superintendent probably would not hold space. Well, it turns out that we got one overnight. We'll present details, and I'll talk with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien about this next, of a 12-year-old middle schooler at Vanguard School in Colorado Springs who was booted from school Monday after officials said he couldn't have the Gadsden flag patch on his backpack because it's racist.
Fox News updates every half hour and the best talk hosts in the business. This is TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com.
11:30 a.m.
Because you deserve the truth.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. John Justice, producer Robbie. We will be at the Minnesota State Fair Friday in the GOP booth, 11 until 1 o'clock. Hope you make plans to come on out and say hi. A.K. Kamara, conservative online opinionator, will also be joining us on Friday, again, 11 to 1 at the GOP booth, the Minnesota State Fair. Lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien joins me in studio. Been to the fair this year? Are you going to the fair?
Have not gone. No plans to go.
Have you been in the past? Are you a big fair guy, Jeff O'Brien?
I'm not a huge fair guy. In all honesty, I think the last time, for those that listen to the show, you'll understand how long ago this was. The last time I was out at the fair was taping an episode of the Minnesota Beercast with Drew and Schmitty before we had Sunday liquor sales.
Actually, I think I remember that.
I think it was just before you showed. I think you were already en route to Minnesota.
Yeah, I think it was probably, it might have been. Well, I arrived. My first day on the air was the fair in 2016. That was my first day on the air, was doing the fair in the dark.
So maybe it was the year before. maybe it was 2015 was the last time that I was out there. So it's been a while.
Yeah, I know. Robbie's been going. He's like there every day. He lives there.
I'm like the mayor. I don't wear mom jeans, though.
It's true. So yesterday, as often happens, Jeff O'Brien, I'm covering this story, and initially I was talking about the flying indefinitely of the LGBT pride flag at the Osseo area schools. I heard anonymously from some individuals close to the school, we'll just say that apparently this was all done without any discussion. They initially said they were going to, the language in the district had changed from June 1st, and somebody went and snuck in indefinitely and didn't tell anybody. So they had a meeting with regard to this, and something else popped out. And it was this, the new superintendent, Dr. Kim Heal, began the meeting explaining that they were going to be holding space with regard to the conversation about the flag, saying that the concept of holding space means we're willing to walk alongside another person no matter what journey they're on. We're not going to judge them. We won't make them feel inadequate. We won't try to fix them. We won't try to limit the impact of the outcome of whatever decision they're making. So we had a lot of individuals making examples of this. It's just not true. If, you know, depending on an individual and what journey they're on, there are guidelines here, sort of standards and things you more than likely would not get behind. Well, it was funny because I was asking Jeff if he heard the story. He's like, no, but then you immediately brought up the example that I was going to bring up today. Because I made this example yesterday. A 12-year-old middle schooler, Vanguard School in Colorado Springs, Colorado, was booted from school on Monday after officials said he couldn't wear the Revolutionary-era-style Gadsden flag patch on his backpack because it's racist. The Liberatus Institute president, Connor Boyack, posted a 3-plus-minute video of the Monday scolding of the student identified only as Jaden, as he was told he couldn't wear the patch on his book bag due to its origins with slavery and slave trade, according to the Outkick. The school's director said via email the patch was disruptive to the classroom environment. Meanwhile, the youngster's mom sounded confused by the charter school's stance as her son politely listened to the exchange, asking what would happen if Jaden didn't remove the patch. And the staffer told the mom the bag can't go back if it's got the patch on it because we can't have that in and around other kids. We'll get into a little bit more of what of the reason why they said that this was inappropriate. But, I mean, I go back to when I was in school. Kids had all kinds of patches, and mostly for bands and stuff like that. You probably had a KISS patch on your...
I didn't, actually.
You didn't. That surprises me.
I did have my marching band letter jacket, though.
Not nearly as egregious as this, though. But, of course, it has nothing to do with slavery. The mom said that's like a Revolutionary War patch that was displayed when they were fighting the British. She pointed out, asking if the school staffer might have mistaken it for the Confederate flag. And the administrator responded, I'm here to enforce policy that was provided by the district. And definitely you have every right not to agree with it. I mean, that's essentially what's going to come down here is whatever the school's district policy is with regard to this type of paraphernalia, I imagine. Right.
Yeah. It says charter school, so it would mean it's a public school, government entity involved here. And, the governments can't engage in viewpoint discrimination when this is a First Amendment issue. I have no issue with students or school. If they want to display the LGBTQ flag, great. If they want to do a Black Lives Matter, great. But then when the kid comes in with the Gadsden flag, let him have it, right? I mean, you're right. It's a Revolutionary War era flag. Today, if anything, it's probably more associated with libertarians than anything.
Mm-hmm.
You get the kid that comes in with the MAGA hat, whatever. I would draw the line at, say, the Nazi flag or the Confederate flag.
I think most everybody would. But these are two different schools. I mean, this is Osseo here in Minnesota, right? We know this is Colorado. But to my point, like with the you got a couple of different things here. You have the holding space aspect of this, and I think if they had a discussion, let's just say, about a group of kids that wanted to fly the Gadsden flag because they're flying the LGBTQ flag. I'm fairly certain the district would be like, no, we're not going to fly that flag. Mm-hmm. Even though they would allow the other one. But I suppose then people would have to go and look at legal remedies if that would be the case, right? You'd have to go and file a discrimination suit at that point in time.
Right, right.
The Conversation, a website, featured a quote from the Iowa State University graphic design scholar Paul Brisky, who said, because of its creator's history and because it's commonly flown alongside Trump 2020 flags... and the Confederate battle flag and other white supremacist flags, they've now made those white supremacist flags apparently, some may now see the Gadsden flag as a symbol of intolerance and hate or even racism. So we have to see what will end up taking place. I imagine that these, you know, the parents will probably just tell the kid to go and remove the flag and move on, unless there is a, some sort of legal team out there that wants to.
You know, there's another option here, John, which, you know, it is a school, so there's, you know, they're educators. There could be a discussion about, you know, the Gadsden flag. There's about a dozen Revolutionary War era flags. What wouldn't be a wonderful history lesson to go through what those flags actually mean or what they were used for? I think the Gadsden flag was like the Colonial Navy or something like that initially, rather than say, well, because some group co-opted the flag for their own use that we don't like, we're just going to ban it. Well, how about explain the purpose behind the point behind the
maybe
history?
Maybe have a flag class.
But we don't teach history anymore.
No, we don't do that anymore. No, that doesn't happen. That, I don't know when that went out. It might have been the last election cycle. Could have been before. Jeff O'Brien, lawyer extraordinaire. Hey, man. Thanks for coming in and hanging out.
Thanks for having me. It was fun to come back in here.
Anything you want to promote before I let you go? People need any legal help or advice?
Well, you can always reach out to me. I'm on Twitter at Jeff O'Brien. Chestnut Cambrone is the firm, J O'Brien at cclawmn.com or 612-336-1298.